Good evening, this is Josh Beiser, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Perceptive Podcast. Tonight, this is going to be our big end-of-the-year wrap-up and just a general catch-up about what's been going on with GameWisdom. And, of course, my guest for this special cast is going to be GameWisdom site designer, Kendall.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Ken, it's been a while since I've had you on.
Yes, I've been pretty busy doing a lot of work, doing some stuff with VR and, just teaching and et cetera. So it's been a pretty wild year, right?
Yeah, it's been a very fast year. It feels like this year just like flew by. Like the summer just seemed like 1 month and then we're already back to fall. Yeah, the weather around here is still crazy. For the international audience listening to this cast, it's like 68, 70 degrees right now. We're in the middle of December here in East Coast, New Jersey. Was it high in Philadelphia, Ken?
70 degrees, pretty wild.
Oh my God.
It must be not good for you for your allergies and all that. So.
Yeah, I can't wait for it to actually get cold so I can finally start breathing again. At least it's not bad, as bad as it was during the summer. That's when the pollen's at its worst. And it was just like, a lot of my casts ended with me just having a hoarse voice for like half the cast.
Well, hey, there's been some pretty big releases, so I'm sure that kind of kept you indoors anyways.
Yeah. I know people are excited about Fallout 4, Just Cause 3. At some point, I need to finally install Batman. What was it? Arkham Knight. I think that's the last one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of controversies we can discuss. There's a lot of things that have passed by that I've not like commented on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to do just a general wrap-up of 2015, talk about some of the big pieces of news, some of the more interesting debates. We're going to be saving some of these topics for later podcasts, as I'm going to have Ken back on probably for a few more, because we have a lot of interesting topics out there. I know last time I think you were on, Ken, we talked about the big Steam mod monetization that happened. I think that was, What was that, like early summer, I think, last we heard?
Yep, that was, I think, that around that time, but it obviously got worked out immediately, so that's
yeah,
cool.
I think we made our podcast in, like, the day after they announced the change.
It was a horrible, horrible storm, And it made a lot of people that made decent mods look bad. You know what's funny? It actually made my first mod ever on Nexus Mods for changing your radio station on Fallout 4.
Nice.
Yeah, it changes it to, and I'll just describe, I'll talk, well, you know what, when we get to Fallout 4, I'll tell you what I've been doing with it.
Okay, not a problem. So to get things rolling then, just a little bit of some, I guess, some serious news or just some like upper management news for those of you listening to the cast. As you know, from basically November to December, for those of you listening to this cast like a few weeks or even months in advance, I was doing a heavy pitch for the Patreon campaign for GameWisdom in order to secure the monthly funding that I needed to keep things going while, of course, supporting my family and my household. Unfortunately, we didn't get the money that I needed. We got a decent turnout, but unfortunately not anywhere close. Which is why, I guess good news, bad news, I was able to get a temporary job, at least for the next few months. The good news is it's going to give me at least some money to keep going on this end. The bad news is it's obviously going to take away time that I have to spend on GameWisdom and doing a lot of the content. As you know, over 2015, I've been pushing more into the YouTube streaming side of things. We have the Twitch channel. The YouTube channel has been getting daily videos. And that is growing quite nicely. I've gone from like 10, 12 subscribers. I think we're at 173 at the time of this recording. And at this rate, I think I'm on track to hit 200 before the end of the year. But as I said, with this temporary job, it is going to get in the way of basically working on the site full time. So for those of you listening, what that means is that there may be days where either a podcast may not go up or a day that I may not be able to post a piece to the site. Just, again, there's only so many hours in the day that I can work. I will try to keep things at least on the steady schedule as much as possible. I've been somewhat keeping well of it, at least for the first few weeks. And like I said, it's only going to be till the end of February. After that, the good news be I'll be back to the site, bad news will be no more weekly money coming in. So you gotta take the good and the bad there. For those of you who are interested in donating to the site with the Patreon campaign, or those who are already contributing, as I said, The ultimate goal of the Patreon campaign is to make Game Wisdom self-sustainable and allow me to work on it while paying for everything. So if you are still interested in contributing, you can check that out on the Patreon site. I'll, of course, give a plug to it at the end of the cast, and any donations would be greatly appreciated. And again, as I said, once this is over in the end of February, I will once again be back to pushing the Patreon campaign a little bit harder while I'm still looking for more work and still looking to get that monthly funding. So for right now, as I said, it'll be basically a good 2-3 months of this, and then we'll be back to our normal schedule. And I think with all that said, we can get away from the more serious stuff. I don't think I have anything more to add. I know, Ken, you said you were, of course, very busy. I know this year has been busy for you with a lot of your contracts and the teaching that you've been doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit busier than normal just because VR is really ramping up. So I have a lot of interesting clientele that want to kind of do not just like, say, the Oculus Rift, but like the Gear VR, so like mobile VR stuff. So I'm doing a lot of experimentation and seeing we can optimize that and see what the best control methods are. So it's fun. I'm doing a lot of experimentation. I'm just happy to be being paid for any VR work I'm getting done, because, you know, a lot of the work that I do is more web related. So to me, VR is more of a passion project than it is livable wage, you know?
And it's definitely been a hard time all around. I know a lot of the guests I've spoken to, especially people who are trying to write or do work in the game industry, have certainly been having trouble finding actual paying work. There's a lot of people out there who do stuff freelance and may just get paid in experience. I know a lot of websites are looking for that, but in terms of actually finding people who are willing to pay for our goals and stuff like that, it's a completely different story.
Wait, are you just saying people, just writers specifically, or talking about game developers?
I'm talking about writers, like people, journalists, streamers, stuff like that.
It's because people are always like, well, I can write. I don't need to pay someone to write things for me. But if you have the right credentials, like example, I hate content writing. I hate it a lot. I can make beautiful interfaces and set systems for people to use, and I make it as idiot-proof as possible. But when they're like, we need filler text, I'm like, I don't want to write it. It takes me forever, because I'm kind of like a perfectionist, so I read the same paragraph multiple times and waste my life rereading what I just wrote over and over again. Though I've tried to make my life a little easier by using some speech to text software, so that's been helping me write longer pieces, etc.
And I'm pretty much the opposite. I can spend an hour and write like 3 different posts up for the site on just who knows what kind of topics. I've been doing that during like my downtime at my job when there's like nothing going on. Like during my break, I'll just sit there and I'll type up like 1,000-word draft for a post. And that's how I've pretty much been sort of maximizing as much time as I can doing everything at once.
And I would say to our audience here that Josh does a lot, writes a ton. It's so much writing and so many posts that I can't even export his database to my local server. It's because it's too huge, and every time I download it, gets corrupted. So it sounds like I'm going to have to actually ask the IT guys that run our web server to actually help me do the transfer, because he has written a lot of content in these last few years.
Well, basically 4 posts a week, the podcast, and now the videos as well, the streaming. So I'm definitely keeping busy on that front.
Well, you know, because we're not, this is more of a kind of a catch up, we can just talk about, you know, games and stuff we've done over the year, or games we've played over the year, or betas we've gotten to over the year. So I'm sure, I'm not quite up to date with what you've been working on, but I have seen all your videos. So that's pretty neat to subscribe to and see you post like that many. It's impressive. And again, I'm always a big proponent of, if you produce content, you'll find an audience. And I think it's really nice to see your page actually grow. So that's good. So did you, or have you tried Overwatch yet?
No, I haven't, but I've been hearing a lot of people talk about it. And of course, for those of you listening, Overwatch is Blizzard's next game. It's going to be their attempt at the cooperative team-based shooter, think something along the lines of Team Fortress, but it looks like it's going to be a little bit more diverse than that.
Yes. Again, I believe the history was originally it was going to be the next MMO,
mm-hmm.
and they found out like what Destiny was doing. I don't know if that's true, but I know that it was going to be the next MMO, and they kind of gutted it just for its multiplayer element, specifically the combat, you know, the PvP stuff, and made its own game called Overwatch. And it's just oozing with style and aesthetic, and it's, to me, of all the spiritual, like, it's not a spiritual successor, but it is pretty close to TF2 in terms of matching what it was trying to do. And you know what's really funny is that because TF2's been out so long, when people see Overwatch, not only do they call it a TF2 clone, they call it there's a Korean game that's a ripoff of TF2, and they say Overwatch is a ripoff of that Korean game. I'm like, no, no, no. That Korean game is a ripoff of TF2. So you're calling like Overwatch a ripoff of a ripoff. So that's that's unwarranted. Mm. To me, honestly, because I got into the beta and I played like nonstop, it was extremely addictive. It's pretty much TF2 with MOBA elements. I mean, that's the simplest way to kind of explain it. But I found it refreshing. Not only, again, like I said before, it's oozing with style, it's oozing with aesthetic. It's got a great range of characters. It has a lot of different play styles. And unlike MOBAs, you're not locked into a character. You switch on the fly with what your team needs.
Yes.
And also, it's not just, you know, Ultimates also change the name of the game. And it's all about, like, timing those abilities with just your general, like, Twitch kind of nature, your reaction time. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, when that game comes out, like, that beta has just impressed me that I'm definitely going to purchase it. And it's going to replace TF2 and
really?
League of Legends. It's going to replace TF2 and League of Legends. That's my main game I'm going to play.
Oh, my
fact,
God.
I even streamed it for a weekend too, which is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I'm very excited.
For those of you listening, for Ken to say he's going to replace TF2 and League of Legends for Overwatch, that is definitely a ringing endorsement right there.
Yes, it is. TF2 has been my main game. I've been a pretty prolific spy. I did, you know, all the competitive stuff. And in the other day, I mean, there's only so much you can do with TF2, so I'm just going to move on because Overwatch is fresh, it's really addictive, it's really fun. I think there's still a couple things I need to work out, balance issues, specifically map balance issues, and obviously some character stuff too, people complain. But I'm still a little weary on how they're going to do their monetary model.
Mm.
But I think they should do it like League style. Sell cosmetic skins and nothing that would boost or augment gameplay. I think they should be making like loads of cash, you know?
Mm-hmm. And speaking about, well, actually, there's two points I want to talk about, Ken. First one is what you said a few minutes ago regarding the sense of style of Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
And this has always been one of Blizzard's strong points. They really get analyzing a video game or analyzing a genre to figure out what works, what doesn't, and essentially create an elevated take of that. We saw that with the work that went into World of Warcraft, Hearthstone, even something like Heroes of the Storm is a great example of that. Sure, mm-hmm. these are games based on a other mega popular genre, but Blizzard does just enough to get the best out of it and then make it something that's very appealing. I know, as you just said, with Overwatch, it does look a lot like the feel of a game like Team Fortress or MOBA, but you get that, you know, that sense of that Blizzard charm and depth that they have to all their titles.
Yeah, to me, like, something like Heroes of the Storm, like, I feel like that's a mishmash. The reason why I always feel like it's kind of like a disgusting platter, like, I don't know why that's a weird kind of description, but, like, you have all these different characters from different genres in one environment, and then they all clash, and I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
While an Overwatch from the ground up is, like, fully realized style and aesthetic, that's and it's very reminiscent of kind of like a Saturday morning cartoon kind of world,
mm-hmm.
and has like nice and bold bright colors, and there's just a lot of the uniformity of it is, I think they did a great job. So like I feel like they did a lot of work and time and design for this MMO, and you know, now it's being placed in this game, so it just feels like I really want to kind of explore this world, and it's sad that I kind of can't because mm-hmm. it is a MOBA like arena shooter, so, but it's still a game that I would highly suggest everyone play. Now, my thing when I play these kind of games, MOBAs, etc., or class-based games, is I like to master a class. So other people like to try them all.
Mm-hmm.
I do try them all once, but then after I try them all once, then I pick a class mastered it. So my major class is actually Tracer, which is like, because I love speed. Like, if I had to pick a superpower, it'd be speed. That's the most powerful of all superhero powers. Mm-hmm. And Tracer's pretty much the scout. So the same technique for the scout, which is pretty much run and gun, hide, shoot, come back and forth, make picks. That's the scout. That's what Tracer does. However, unlike the scout, Tracer has an escape, like a spy escape. She can just rewind time and go back to some spot she was a few seconds ago and gain some health back, so which makes her a pretty powerful asset. And her skill set is pretty simple, so it's really about reactionary gameplay. However, there's things like tank characters and defensive characters, and I guess there's three types of characters in Overwatch. There's attack, defense, and support.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone hearing that, it sounds very similar to MOBAs, right? You pick a lane, you pick certain roles that you need in that lane. But here you kind of mix and match. They ask you, obviously, to pick a certain setup from the get-go. But you can always change that up because you never know what's going to work. Like, again, if people don't know how to play around a certain character, you can then choose another character who take care of that kind of issue, which is why I love TF2. Because, again, if I can't get around a sentry, I go spy. And if I'm being covered in flames all the time, switch to sniper, whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's taking the best elements of TF2 and taking out like the micromanaging nature of MOBAs and like making a really nice symphony together.
Yeah. And I think one other part I want to just briefly talk about Overwatch is the monetization model, or at least the model that they're going for right now. From what I heard, it is going to be a full retail purchase, right? It's not going to be a free-to-play game. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. It's $40 for the pre-purchase. It comes with the skin. $60 or more, maybe, for the like package of skins, mm-hmm. right? And there's like an Ultra one coming to the statue. Definitely, by the way, I would have bought the Ultra one if it came with a Tracer statue, but it comes with like the soldier statue. And I'm like, that's the, of all the characters, that's the most boring. The most boring character is the soldier. I'm like, he's a dude with a gun. He's got like average abilities. I'm like, okay. I mean, he's a 3 out of 5 all around, you know, he's the Cyclops, like whatever. Like he's doable. It's fine. But like, why a statue of him? There's so many other interesting characters. Why a statue of him? Is it because he's, I don't know. But there is a Tracer statue that did sell at BlizzCon, and it's awesome, of the Tracer statue. And the thing is that I would buy things like that, but I really don't want to cram anything else in my apartment. So
you already have all the VR stuff.
Right.
The Omni treadmill, is that right? You saw
That's coming in April. So like, it's going to be like horrific, along with the STEM controllers. Because like right now, like my VR development is held up by all these bad Kickstarters, you know, not being able to... you know, it's hardware specifically that has an issue with Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Though, I would like to, if you want to bring on to another subject, we can talk about the, and this is a dear to my heart, Psychonox 2 announcement. Did you hear about that?
Yes. And we'll talk about that in a minute. I do want to stay on Overwatch for at least another minute, so I just want to comment on one more thing that I'm looking at.
Sure.
I'm looking at the Origins Edition, Collector's Edition, all these fancy editions, and one of the things I want to call to attention that I find very interesting about Blizzard and their marketing strategies these days is how they're tying all their games together. I talked about this in a post I made in 2015 about how Blizzard is trying to get away from separate game brands and instead focusing on Blizzard as a total brand. So, for instance, I'm looking at the Overwatch Collector's Edition. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you get the bonuses with the games, skins, the statue, all that. But then there's stuff like you get a pet, an exclusive pet for World of Warcraft, an exclusive card back for Hearthstone, wings for Diablo 3, portraits for StarCraft 2. And I find this to be a very effective form of marketing. I know they've been experimenting with this over the last few years. It used to be just for collector's editions. Now they're having stuff like play enough Diablo 3, you'll get a card back for Hearthstone. Play enough Hearthstone, you'll get a pet for World of Warcraft, etc. And I just think that this is a very interesting tactic that Blizzard's doing. And I know it's a great way, I think, of getting people to try these games out. I know for a lot of people, when they heard there's going to be, you know, exclusive skin or exclusive mount for playing Heroes of the Storm, you know, they jumped in to try that stuff, and then if they like it, hell, they have a new game to play. So, a question for you, Ken. These types of cross-game promotional content, does this, like, ever work for you to get you to try a different game that you wouldn't have played otherwise?
Yes. It's called TF2. There was a bunch of games where you had, if you pre-purchased a game, you would get specialized hats. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they would become genuine hats. Mm-hmm. So, I've done it already. So, it does work. What I think was interesting is they also actually add that character I told you about, Tracer, is also being placed in as a hero in Heroes of the Storm. Mm-hmm. So you actually can play her too.
Yeah. And again, this kind of cross-game promotion really does work to get people to try these games. And I know a lot of people, when they see something that they like to play, they use an exclusive bonus for playing another game, it gets them to try those games. Again, as you just said, Ken, a lot of the TF2 hats is a great example of that. I know there are some, of course, a perfect example that would be like the Poker Night games from Telltale, where when you play enough of them, you got like exclusive TF2 content.
Right. So it does work. It's very effective. I think it's also the way you do it. If it's not manipulative and they actually, you know, make an effort and make it pretty clear, I think people are willing to purchase or try certain products.
Yeah.
Especially if they're similar to what the other game was promoting. You know?
Yep. And my last point, which may actually sort of segue into a topic that I've been talking about this last year, you said a few minutes ago, Ken, regarding TF2 being your go-to game, the one you like to play all the time. And for those of you who listen to the cast, you know that my go-to game has been Payday 2. And obviously, Payday 2 has had one hell of a roller coaster of a year in terms of consumer backlash.
Hubris, man. Hubris.
I mean, I haven't even loaded the game up in like the last month or so. I'm actually considering uninstalling it at this point. And just due to like so many mistakes Overkill has made with expectations from the audience and their own actions that they made to this game. Now, I know you haven't played too much of Payday 2, Ken, but have you followed or kept in touch of what's been going on with it?
From my knowledge, this is what I got from the grapevine. I know, I'm sure it's not as detailed as you know, but I guess they initially said that they would never do microtrans for this game. And then they announced microtrans for this game. I understand why. They have to eat, right? Come on. You can't support a game this long and not have any sort of money coming in or no monetary model coming in. And again, they don't want to shut the game down because they have such a huge audience, so they're kind of stuck in a bad place. However, their communication of that information wasn't clear and came off as deal with it. And their PR that comes out just reinforced the, well, you either play with the system or you don't kind of thing. And I'm sure that got a lot of backlash, especially if, you know, internet doesn't forget. You make a statement like that, you have to stick to it.
And there's the fact that the game is not a free-to-play title. You have to buy all the DLC, you have to buy the game. So it's made a lot of money for them. They've actually gotten enough support from their publisher to support the game until 2017. So it's not like they're hurting for money. The problem is, of course, that they're trying to do Payday 2, they're trying to do some kind of, I think, VR thing, and they're also trying to do the Walking Dead game all at the same time. So the studio's going from like 20, 25 employees to like 50, 60 people working full time. So their costs, their daily operating costs have just ballooned. And I think they're just trying to do too much. And as you just said, Ken, their PR and their community engagement has just been horrendous.
And just from my memory, because you played it so much, what have they kind of come to, and like what kind of middle ground have they, you know, discussed with their audience?
Well, the first thing was making it so the drills that you need to basically get the safes, which are the premium content kind of thing, there's a chance of them dropping, but it's a 25% chance once a week. So it's not like you're going to get it regularly. They've been trying to, I guess, like, seeded into the game ever so slowly. They've had, like, free community events where you play a map, you get a specific achievement, you'll get a free safe. They've been talking about having a way of, I guess, more reliable way of getting drills each month, but I don't know exactly what that entails just yet. And, you know, they've been promising, oh, we're going to communicate with the community more, we're going to hire more CMs to, you know, be our middlemen, stuff like that. And between the big Crime Fest event and all the trouble, and now, they've released one additional piece of DLC, of course, which has, you know, the safe, and you have to pay for it. And things have, I think, cooled down, but I think a lot of people have jumped ship from Payday 2, at least in terms of, like, the hardcore audience, the people like me who've been playing the game since day one.
Well, that's sad, you know? It seems like a very... If they were just clear and honest with what they had to do instead of kind of just pushing this on their audience, I think they would have reacted appropriately and fairly, etc. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But because of the way they went about it and kind of looking at other games like TF2 in terms of how they do their microtrans and just shoving it onto this audience, it was the wrong call.
Yeah.
And I feel like because there's so much competition, right,
mm-hmm.
that why would they stay? There's no reason for them to stay. They were staying because they liked the developers and liked the game, and now they like the game, hate developers, there's other games to use their attention.
Yeah. And I think the part that pisses off a lot of people, including me, is that we've been talking on the forums about things that Overkill can do to make the game better. A lot of either quality of life features or upgrades that everyone agrees would be great for the game. Even ways of having the system in that would not be as intrusive and annoying. And they just went for, you know, the cheapest, most bargain bin way of adding in this economy system. And I don't want to talk too much about the economy system on this cast because we're going to dedicate a separate cast to that in the coming weeks. But it definitely seems like everything Overkill could have done, they did in the worst way possible. And you brought up Team Fortress 2, and I think that's a great counterexample of what they did. When they announced a game with the microtransactions, they made Team Fortress 2 free to play. They communicated it perfectly to the audience with, like, the whole FAQ. They made sure everyone knew what was going to happen. With this, it just showed up literally on the first day of their big 10-day event that was supposed to be free content for Payday 2. It just shows, you know, complete miscommunication of what they're trying to give to the community.
And that's tragic, too, because, again, they did so much work on making this game good, and the first Payday was such a breakout hit.
Mm-hmm.
I actually kind of like, honestly, I know you love Payday 2, but I still love Payday 1 more.
Mm-hmm.
It was just simpler. It was just so simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yo, do this bank scenario. Done. I would have just played. I would have just played that over again to add more mass for me. I'd do that. That's fine.
And the growth has been Overkill's strategy to try to turn Payday 2 into, you know, the next Team Fortress. They want to make this game that they could support for years on end. So far, we're up to about 2 years now, but they're just having the trouble of transitioning it from the short-term development, you know, 6 months of post-content release to trying to make a game that can be supported for years on end. I mean, Team Fortress 2, I think, had its 7-year anniversary last year. And that is just insane to think about a non-MMO being supported for that long.
And, again, it just kind of goes with its audience. Because they're pretty clear with them. They're not that exploitive. If everything is per choice. It's just a very unique community, and it's still a very active community, but it's also kind of sad that it's never gotten, like, to the esports level as it should be, because it is such an intense kind of game, and it's still fun and silly, but you could definitely play it competitive, but, like, again, the biggest pots are, like, 17,000, which isn't anything close to CSGO or League or mm-hmm. Dota, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I'm actually, another reason I've said about Overwatch is because I think Overwatch definitely has the system's built in to be a really great esport.
Mm-hmm.
If they made a competitive ladder for that, I'd definitely do it and waste my time.
Yeah, and esports is probably another big trend. We're seeing more games try to reach for that audience because it is a very lucrative audience. Obviously, StarCraft 2 is a great example. Dota 2, and even like competitive fighting games, everything has been growing to make this a lot more mainstream. I'm watching, you know, every year I like to watch the Evo tournaments. I think, didn't we have like a major tournament this year, like broadcasted on, I think, ESPN2 or something like that?
Dota.
Yeah. So I guess here's like just like one quick tangent question for you, Ken, before we move on. Do you think esports will become mainstream? Do you think there will be a day where we'll watch like a Dota 2 match on like NBC or something like that?
No. Not for a while. I mean, I'm talking about it has to be like a generation has to die out first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the baby boomers, when they're gone, maybe. Or when generation X and Y also go. And it's just a generational, like the millennials, then sure. That's probably possible then.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that happening. Because at that point, games have been so ingrained in them and brought up, and there's a lot more understanding and acceptance of them. I think that would make sense. But for now, we have the old fogey saying, oh, sports, they have to be physical, see? You got to throw a ball at somebody, see?
With
you
the 30s accent, right?
Exactly. That's how I picture all baby boomers, even though they weren't even born in the 20s and 30s. But yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. It's just more, we need a cultural shift to do that. I feel like there'll still be a niche. I think that'll still be like, there's still being large amounts of views for it. But in terms of mainstream, like cable channel, no, not for a long time.
Okay. All right. With that, let's move on to our next big trend, or one very interesting thing that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Ken, and that is the Psychonauts 2. It's not really a Kickstarter, it's a FIG crowdfunding campaign. So, obviously, for those of you listening to the cast, Ken is a huge fan of Psychonauts. He's, of course, brought this up, but I'm looking at his little Skype icon, and it's Raz with the Oculus Rift on.
Yeah, I mean, I would say of the core games, that's probably one of the most influential games that I played. And to me, one of the most humorous games I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
And so me hearing about Psychonauts 2 and what FIG is trying to do, which is they're trying to do, not only is it crowdfunding, but it's also giving you a bit of the pot, per se.
Mm-hmm.
So there is more of an investment kind of, like a more truer investment model for it. I don't exactly how it goes, but I think the greater the risk you put in there and the more money you put in there, the greater your return can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's I mean, and to me, Psychonauts 2 is kind of like a sure thing. And if I had the extra $10,000, I'd do that for sure.
Yep, and that's kind of very interesting about letting you, quote-unquote, invest in the game. Because this is something that, when we first started doing these podcasts, we had that discussion about Kickstarter and crowdfunding, and whether or not it would be right or viable to give people investment options instead of just, you know, the stretch goals, or, I'm sorry, the rewards. And it's kind of weird to see where we're at now. Because I'm looking at the FIG campaign right now for it, and yes, they do let you invest. According to the page, how it works is that for every $500 that you invest in Psychonauts 2, you'll earn $2.50 back for every, let me get this right, $68,376 in gross revenue until $13.33 million. And after that, you'll earn a dollar for every of the same amount, 68,376. And I think that's adjusted gross revenue. So from what that sounds like, I think that's going to be a very interesting option. I'm actually a little lost for words about whether or not this is going to succeed or not. What do you think, Ken?
I think they're doing something fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been such backlash against them. So much complaints that, hey, why don't I get money out of it? I'm like, well, Kickstarter isn't an investment platform. It is a charity,
mm-hmm.
in a way. So it's good for them to kind of create a system like this. And also, another thing is, too, is because he's one of the co-directors of FIG, he gets to keep a bigger portion. So the portion that FIG takes, he gets to keep for his company. So it's a less of a
risk for them.
Yeah. So example, like, yeah, they made $4 million on Kickstarter or whatever, how much they made. Was it $4
million? Oof. I don't know. It's been a while. I can actually look that up if you want to, like, finish your thought.
Yeah, but Kickstarter takes 20% of that. Think about that, mm-hmm. right? So if it's going to take 20% of it, it goes right back to the company. And if other platforms do it, it'll also help the company not have to be so desperate for money, per se. And I think that also they have a lot of experience now with crowdfunding, and they know what to do and what not to do and how to manage your company a little bit better in terms of how to create a game. I would say you got to give them a second chance. Mm-hmm. And for a game like Psychonauts to be made, for you to be butthurt about Broken Age, which, again, no expectations. They put a very low amount for Broken Age. They didn't, but and they felt like they had to make something grand because they got so much money. They could have just kept it a small game and that was it.
Yep, it's,
but because, yeah, go ahead.
It's the classic trouble we see with Kickstarters. One of the mistakes people make is the more money you get, you obviously need to put more into it. And I think it just ballooned out of control. It's almost as bad as getting barely enough and, you know, trying to make money work. Because I've spoken to a lot of developers who talk about the challenges of, you know, you do a Kickstarter game and you say, oh, we're just going to have 20 stretch goals. You know, what's the worst that could happen? And you have no idea if those stretch goals are going to work or not. And you're promising content that may never even fit into the game. And then you're kind of stuck between, you know, all the millions of dollars you got to add that in.
Right. And that's why I'm saying that, because we've seen these follies, issues, companies fail, even the great Double Fine fail, that I think they'll learn from their mistake. I think their system is pretty interesting. I think it's a great platform. I really want to see Psychonauts 2, a spiritual successor to it. I mean, it is not a spiritual. It is a straight-up successor to Psychonauts 2. So I definitely want to see it. Of all the games, you know, this isn't Cars 2, okay? This is like an Incredibles 2 in the gaming world. Like, we want to see this come out. So I'm saving up some money, and then after Christmas time, when all my money's spent on presents, I will then waste my money on Psychonauts 2. That's the goal.
Yeah.
Because again, it is a game that is worth the investment and worth the time, because unlike Broken Age, which had no expectations and nothing was really refined or defined about it, this has an aesthetic that's already defined. It has a background that's already set. Mm-hmm. Like, its world is already built. Everything is laid out for it. Now it's just adding a story to it, obviously, and then reworking those assets.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel like they have less room for error for this one. I mean, they have a lot more expectations, of course, but I'm saying they're not going to just, like, fiddle around and make 40 iterations of a character for like they did with Broken Age. Well, not just characters and environments. Mm-hmm. So I think they have a lot to play with in this one. But again, I think Psychonauts, because of the way Psychonauts ended, Psychonauts 2 has a lot more room to kind of grow. And that's what I kind of worry about is $3 million really enough to make adequate Psychonauts? Because if you remember Notch, right, he offered to fund Psychonauts. And he said he was willing to put $2 million, and Double Fine said we need $26 million. And then he said, "No thanks."
Well, according to the Fig campaign, they said that they will be getting external backing for Psychonauts 2. They just need the. Let me pull this back up quickly. They need. Come on, site load quicker. 1 second, I can pull that up.
Your potato internet.
No, it's the website. Here it is. They need $3.3 million for it, for Psychonauts 2. And so part, I bet the deal is what we hear from a lot of the, I guess the AA studios doing Kickstarter or crowdfunding, is that this is the money to show to an actual investor saying, hey, these people are interested in this game. Now we need someone to fund the rest of it. Sort of like what they did with the... Oh, I can't believe I forget the name of the game. The one from the developer of Castlevania Symphony of the Night, Ukulele. Those are like major games. They're getting a lot of their funding from outside, and they're using Kickstarter essentially to gauge the consumer interest in it.
Right, and I think that's fair if you're upfront with your audience. If you don't do that, like the Japanese companies do, Japanese developers do, like Kenne Inafune. Like, that was his problem, why Red Ash failed, is because he wasn't clear with why, like, he was getting funded already, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, they made their goal, and then everyone refunded their amount because they found out it was, like, already funded.
Yeah.
And they were just giving them money for, like, no reason.
Yeah.
Like, we gave them publicity money, which is silly, because there's other developers that struggle and need that money. develop their dream games, right? Mm-hmm.
And as a quick aside, I checked the Double Fine Adventure. They did pull in about $3.3 million when they were only asking for $400,000 for that.
See? Exactly. And this is new grounds they're treading on. So for them to make a mistake, very plausible. Now, I'm not trying to be an apologist for them or anything, but I can understand how they got to that state, you know? Mm-hmm. Especially creatives dealing with money. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, we don't want the other way around where, like, we have EA where it's business first and art second, mm-hmm. or, like, dead last, right? It's like money first, marketing second, art, janitorial duties third, are all the way at the bottom. So mm-hmm. we don't want that either. So, again, another reason we have all this crowdfunding is so we can realize those visions. It's just that it usually takes a lot more money to realize those visions. Yeah.
And I think one of the other big lessons I've learned from speaking to developers over the last year or so is that while you do need to balance the artist with the businessman, you need both in order to run a successful company. And too often, as we saw with like Broken Age, when you just go purely for creative, you can run into issues where a project gets blown way out of proportion, not just with a game like Broken Age, but we see with a lot of indie developers, especially those who have gone to Kickstarter, who then either fail to produce a game or they produce a game that's way under the expectations that they originally promised. Mm-hmm.
Or we see it the other way, where we have a game like Fuse, where it's oozing with style, mm-hmm. and then 3 months later, it becomes this like crappy, flat-looking four-player co-op because they went through a focus group and changed everything. Like, it's just too stylistic. I wanted to be more like Call of Duty. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
and I think that's the opposite of the spectrum, when the art gets put aside for pure business. And so you really do need that balance. And the studios do the best are the ones who can manage both ends. I think an example, one that I've spoke to in 2015, would be Harebrained Schemes, the guys behind Shadowrun and the... I can't believe I forgot the name.
Pillars of Eternity?
No, not Pillars of Eternity. That was, I think, Obsidian.
That's Obsidian. Yeah. Harebrained Scream is, they're Shadowrun, which I need to get the new expansion, Hong Kong.
Yep, and they also did the one about bringing the Mech Warrior license back.
Okay.
And I can pull that up quickly.
I'm still waiting for Planes of Torment. I backed that game.
For which one?
Planes of Torment.
Oh, yeah. It's not out yet?
No.
Really?
Tides of Numeria?
Oh, okay. Oh, the game...
Planescape Torment.
Yeah. Okay. The Harebrained Scheme, it was BattleTech, which is going to be sort of their continuation of the MechWarrior franchise. And this is a studio, this is their fourth Kickstarter that they succeeded in. And they have really gotten it down. When I spoke to one of the founders, they have really gotten it down to a science about how they approach Kickstarter, how they develop a game based on crowdfunding, and then building their project scope and schedule into that. He talked about how they basically set all their projects up for 18-month development cycles. No more, no less. If someone wants more content, they just say, no, we're not going to do that because that's going to blow, the game's project out of whack.
Right. That makes sense. It's pretty fair. It's just that it's like when you actually release it, then you get your fans saying, what about this and what about that? Mm-hmm. But that's when they just add expansions. I would say a couple companies that do have free reign in terms of both money and creativity mm-hmm. is things like CD Projekt Red, right?
Because
they own good old games.
And, of course, The Witcher.
Well, that allowed them to like have so much financial like money that they could do whatever they want. They could take as much time as they wanted with The Witcher and Witcher 3,
mm-hmm.
which is why Witcher 3 was so awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's a game that I haven't actually finished, and I really want to. Same thing goes with... like Valve, they don't make games as much anymore, but mm-hmm. if they have so much money, they could spend like 40 years on a game if they want to do, because they're making so much money and make it amazing.
And of course the joke that Half-Life 3 will come out any day now, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm saying that those kind of companies, specifically CD Projekt Red, which is also very consumer friendly,
mm-hmm.
I think they're probably one of the best developers out there in terms of that balance. But again, like, there's so many games that are just shot out for license reasons. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, what was like, I really, I think one of the best ones probably Star Wars Force Unleashed 2. Mm. Ugh, what a stupid, terrible game that was.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And the example for me this year would be like what they did with Mortal Kombat 10 for the PC. It was released with so many bugs and issues with the game because it was handed to a third party to do the porting instead of NetherRealm doing it themselves.
You know what? We should bring this into Arkham Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Arkham Knight next.
Yep. And I think that's a good segue. I think before we move on, let's quickly wrap up talking about Psychonauts 2. So at mm-hmm. this moment in time, when we're recording this on December 13th, they are at $2.6 million raised. So they have just about $700,000, a little bit there, $700,000 left to hit their goal of $3.3 million for Psychonauts 2. So it's going to be interesting to see if they make it. They have until January 12th to do it. And I know, as you said earlier, Ken, that I think with the holidays, a lot of people are, you know, busy doing their holiday shopping right now. December's, mm-hmm. of course, that busy time of month. So it'll be interesting to see how far we'll hit once we get into the new year, especially to see if they have, you know, like that end of crowdfunding bump that we see a lot on Kickstarter.
Well, I mean, I definitely think it's probably going to be a pretty big bump, especially because it's getting so close. Mm-hmm. I think they can easily reach their goal. Mm-hmm. Probably not even go over it, just get to the goal, because asking for $3 million is a lot.
Yeah.
If you did that on Kickstarter, you probably wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
So, but this is, they're pretty straightforward with this, and they're trying to be pioneers for this system, so I say more power to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be putting in a little bit more than their basic package for this. And it's only a couple games I've ever done that. One of them was Dreamfall Chapters.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up, too. Is that...
I put...
I'm sorry, I just want to ask you. Is that game completely done yet, or are they still releasing
nope.
episodes? Okay.
They're on episode... They actually just released episode 4. So that's probably pretty impressive that with their initial Kickstarter money, they actually stretched it all the way to 4 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even get that much.
Mm.
They got it very quickly, though.
Mm-hmm.
I got their, like, super edition, $100 edition or whatever. So mm-hmm. I didn't even pick up my rewards. I just wanted to give them money because I love Longest Journey so much. Though, there's a couple iffy things with the game. Issues with optimization, etc. There's moments in that game, I don't know if it's me or the game, but I kind of just spend the time when they're talking just spinning the camera around. I think it's because they don't do like the cutscene thing where it goes back and forth. It's just like, you're just...
Watching like two people talking, like staying motionless?
Yeah, I'm just like, oh my god. And I'm spinning in a circle, I'm like, move on. And there's 3 different characters. I only want the one, or 2 characters that you follow. I only want to follow the one.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm forced to follow the other guy, and I'm like, no, he was already boring in Dreamfall.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's even more boring.
Yeah, as a complete tangent on that, I would really love to see more game developers work on making conversations more engaging, where it's not just 2 people standing around, you know, motionless talking. But of course, that costs a lot more money to animate.
I think you'll see that in, like, VR.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll see that all those minute details are pretty important. You know what I liked in terms of the conversation battles? Undertale is supposed to be pretty cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like Deus Ex, the new one.
You mean?
Not. Oh, yeah, we should talk about that, too, about the Deus Ex thing. Because I love, there's another series I really love. The last journey is Deus Ex.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like, what was it called? Come on.
Human Revolution?
Human Revolution, right. I really like their system in terms of, like,
yeah,
discussing and convincing people to do certain things.
Yeah, that was really fun. All right, before we move on and talk more about Arkham Knight and sort of like the state of releasing buggy games, to wrap up talking about Psychonauts 2, I think I'm with you. I'm generally optimistic about them. Psychonauts, the original, I think, was Double Fine's and probably still is their biggest and most well-known property. I really enjoyed it. I know I'm probably like one of the few people who liked the meat circus level. Every time someone talks about Psychonauts, they bring up how much they hated that level.
It was difficult, but it was no. To me, it was like the same level of difficulty as, say, a Donkey Kong Country cart level.
Yeah.
How you have to kind of memorize everything. Like, that's fine.
And I know like a little exploit. You can just skip one of the whole sections by just floating down. But yeah, I hear so many people talk about that. I'm like, really? That's where people got stuck? But then again,
it's weird
like that.
Whenever I think of that game, I think of one simple line. It's like the first time they jump into someone's head. He's with a little kid, Raz, the main character, and they're like, "We're here in the mental world," And the killer kid's like, let's look at dentist office. He's like, a mental dentist office. That's my favorite stupid lines in that series. Mm-hmm. But there's so many great set pieces in that game. Yeah. And it's just like Beyond Good and Evil, like a great, well-received, criticized game, like critical praise per se for this game, mm-hmm. but just really poor sales. So yeah. I'm hoping, like, because I want the series to go on, that it'll get its funding and Double Fine will kind of redeem itself to like the public's eye that they are a worthwhile developer to invest in.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you just said it, Ken, about redeeming themselves, because that's my final point. I think that this is going to be their big make it or break it game. If they do succeed on Fig and Psychonauts 2 turns out horrible, I think that may be the nail in the coffin for them.
I wouldn't say that. I would say that they will be pretty much subjected to making smaller games from now on, right? With low expectations. But if they do it successful and makes it big, it'll give a new avenue for other developers and also people that want to invest in a different kind of way that are kind of burnt out on Kickstarter and Indiegogo, etc., to try this method, to be even more of an active participant in the development cycle. Mm-hmm. And again, even if I didn't fund Psychonauts 2, I would buy Psychonauts 2. Mm-hmm. Like, I am that much of a fan, but I wonder, like, my mania for Psychonauts 2, I wonder how much that is shared with the public in terms of numbers. Is that a large number? Is it well-known enough? I don't know.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, for right now, it's too soon to say anything. But it will be interesting to see what will come of it. I know, according to the Fig campaign, they are estimating 2018 to actually release the game.
Oh, my God. I'll be dead then. Freedom Force is another game I'm like crazy for. I know that probably has the smallest fan base ever. I always have an urge once in a while to actually install that game and try it on Steam.
Oh, yes. I know we talked about how bad Freedom Force 2 did, sadly.
No, but that was such a good game.
I know.
But again, it's not all about good games anymore. It's the same thing with movies. Like, you can make a great movie, mm-hmm. and it's not really about how the quality of the movie is or quality of the game. It's about how it's marketed and how it's where it gets picked up. It's just very sad.
Yeah, but it's just one of those crazy times, especially with the game industry. It's not enough, as you just said, Ken, to have a great game. You need to do marketing. You need to do the PR. When I spoke with Travis and Eric from Double Damage, they talk about just how important it was to get the game in the hands of people who stream the game, like myself, to get that word of mouth out, because without it, you don't have a game. Doesn't matter if your game's an amazing title if no one's ever heard of it.
See, what I hate is a stigma that the reason why your game or movie wasn't successful is because you made a bad movie or a game, like wrong. Like, you can make a fantastic, I mean, you can make a Citizen Kane movie, all right? But if no one sees it, it's still a failed movie. Mm-hmm. But not a bad movie, just a failed movie or failed game.
Yeah.
So, again, it is really important for that. And I feel like the way that marketing goes is, you know, going to the YouTube personalities, going to these streamers, going to these journals, websites, and, you know, playing kind of nice with them. And if they're going to criticize your game, let them, because that's just... That's reality. The more you push back against these people that you allow to play your game, you know, you might lose a little sales, but you creep your credibility for future, right? Mm-hmm. But if you blacklist people, that's bad. But then again, aren't there a couple of companies that blacklisted Kotaku recently?
Yeah, there are some who blacklisted Kotaku. I know several game developers have been caught putting a DMCA claims on YouTubers who they don't like, trying to get them, you know, the three strikes for copyright infringement.
Yeah, exactly. That's really bad to do that, because that's their livelihood. Mm-hmm. And as for the journalists doing that, it depends on the severity of the journalist. So, example, if they were to release a huge, like, you know, like release the source code for Fallout 4 before Fallout 4 came out, right? That would be pretty bad. There's certain levels, but I don't know exactly what they did, but I did believe that they kind of like but they kind of got some specific information somehow legally and were able to shoot it out there. But they're not really known that much for their credibility anymore since Gawker is kind of like a douchey network.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting to see the state of game journalism. We talked about this a little bit at the start of the cast with how hard it is to break in. And again, a lot of people, like, why should someone pay for something when you have, you know, 50 or several hundred people willing to write a free blog post or make a little video on YouTube? And then again, there's also that, I think there is somewhat of a jealousy angle too. You know, the people like PewDiePie, who I think he reported he made like $4.1 million in ad revenue in 2014. When that was announced, there's so many people who just, like, you know, they just backlash against him after that.
Well, it's not his fault, right? Yeah. It's like, that's why he really hates talking to regular, like, mass media or main media, you know, like, quote, mainstream media. Because the first thing they always ask him is, how much money do you make a year? Right? Because it is a non-traditional job. I'm like, listen, people like you are the reason why he gets this kind of backlash. Because he has to walk a fine line of keeping his audience and, you know, like, making money through whatever revenue stream he's got.
Yeah. And it's just kind of, it's one of those things that we especially see with the game industry, how quickly it's transitioned from print media to digital to now, you know, the YouTuber streaming type thing. And it's kind of going to be interesting to just to see how things are going to evolve over the next 5 years. Or technically, by the time you hear this cast, probably the next 4 years, since we'll be in 2016.
Holy moly. I'm just thinking about what you said about the 4 years. Please, Yamete. It just makes me sad that that's what's going to happen. That I'm going to wait that long to see it.
And who knows, maybe what happens if they push it back?
Oh my god. That, like, I don't want to think about that many years. I'm getting older. It sucks.
Yeah. Alright, let's move on to another topic then. I think we'll do maybe one, two more topics, and then we'll probably start to wrap things up for this cast.
Sure.
So, this is one that you brought up a few minutes ago, Ken. That's talking about the state of porting AAA games to the PC. Of course, Arkham Knight is a big example of that. And how the ball was dropped a lot for AAA developers this year. There was Assassin's Creed that had a lot of trouble. Arkham Knight. I'm sorry, what?
Wasn't Unity a lot worse than the Syndicate game that came out?
Yeah, I think that was the one. It just had tons of bugs, didn't work. Mortal Kombat 10 example that I brought up. And I'm sure there's one other big name. Oh, yeah, of course, there's an example of SimCity 5 from a few years ago and all the trouble that happened.
Well, that was like...
That was just a PC, yeah. But we're definitely seeing a lot of AAA games having trouble or just refusing to work on their games and getting it to a point of stability. I know you brought up Witcher 3 earlier, and that was a great example of a developer who took the time. When it was released, I think I didn't hear too much about, you know, horrendous bugs. There are, of course, obviously a few, but it was nowhere near the state as Assassin's Creed Unity or Arkham Knight.
Right. I think because of, like, say, certain communities that exist are becoming more polarized. So now it's not about a console war as much as there is a console versus PC war that's also going on too. Because in actuality, as we always knew, that PCs are superior to a console in terms of its hardware. But the reason why developers don't focus on the PC, because it's an open device compared to the closed devices, which are the, are quote, tethered devices that consoles are. You know what kind of experience you're building your game for when you're building for the PS4 or Xbox, right? Because it's all the same hardware. But PCs have a huge range. So you got to do your test. It's going to increase your QA. It's going to increase the time for optimization. It's not really worth putting all the time for PC. However, nowadays, I would say that why not do for PCs? Because the architecture is actually very similar for the PS4 and the Xbox. So why not develop for PC first, then port it to them instead of the opposite way around where you port it for for those systems there? And all you have to do is just change your controller setup for those consoles and done. Easy peasy.
And we're seeing developers go for a console first and then either not spending a lot of time on the port or sending it to a third party, like we saw with Mortal Kombat.
I just think it's tragic what happened to Arkham Knight, because Arkham City was such a great PC port. I mean, that was good. Yeah. I think Arkham Asylum was also really good. And again, they were going to make a master trilogy. This is like their magnum opus, right? Yeah. The third game. And it got foreshadowed. The story, everything, all the critical praise got overshadowed by the PC issues, the ridiculous PC issues that existed. I think the only major problem, the only thing that I was worried about, and it was definitely true in all the reviews I saw, was the car section, the Batmobile section. I'm like, why does he have a car? I mean, I know he has a car, but like, why are you driving around it? Why are you shooting tanks that are robotic? I'm like, all right, enough.
Yeah, we grapple. That's what we do.
Yeah, it's supposed to grapple. Yeah. Like, it's supposed to be like a ninja in the sky. It's just sad because all those people that worked on that game put their heart into it and research they did for DC Comics and, you know, going through all, like, it's definitely a labor of love. And for it all to be ruined because some business guy was like, yo,
we need to get this out early.
We wanted to be bring it pretty close to our console releases. So let's just give it to Iron Galaxy, who already ruined, they already ruined the, Arkham Origins game, right? Batman Origins, that one. They did that, and it had horrible amounts of bug issues. It was ported by the same people. I'm like, listen, they ported by the first time. Are you really going to give your golden goose to, like, the village clown? And they did exactly that. What is the first thing he did? Took a crap on it and then kicked it down a hill, all right? It's, that game is now forever going to be known as a terrible PC port. Not Arkham Knight, the trilogy, the capstone to Rocksteady's amazing Batman adventures. Yeah.
And this actually is a good follow point to what we just talked about a few minutes ago with the fact that there's more to success and failure for a game these days than just making a quality title. With Arkham Knight, as you just said, it's an amazing game. People love the hell out of it. But again, it was completely overshadowed by all the negative problems, all the bugs and the ports, and that stuff flows back to the console version. Because when you hear that developer doesn't do a good job there, why would you want to support that developer in the future? And the sad part is that Rocksteady was not directly, I can't say with firsthand, but they're not the ones who ported the game, but they were sort of,
they had
their hands tied by their publisher.
Right, exactly. Publisher's like, yo, we know you made this great game, and we could have given your internal team the way to optimize this, but no. We're going to save ourselves. We're going to give this company like $300. Mm-hmm. They'll port it. Done. And they'll do it in like less than like 2 months, I believe.
Yeah, I think they got it.
I'm like, wow.
Wasn't the game released in like September or October or something like that?
Yeah, but I think the PC port was a very limited, quick turnaround.
Yeah, like 2 months tops, I think.
Yeah, but like, of all the vocal people of communities, I think PC has one of the most vocal. I mean, there's a whole subreddit dedicated to the PC Master Race. It's a whole subreddit.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, it's half parody, half superiority complex in that subreddit. And like, it's funny because like a lot of the stuff they post, especially when they post like I've Ascended, when they buy PC parts, they're not even that fantastic of PC peripherals and stuff. But I mean, I get where they're coming from, and I completely agree. Like, why would you want to buy a console if it would limit you and it costs as much as, like, you know, like a custom built PC for the same price, a lot more powerful.
And speaking about like publisher interference and some of the trouble that gets into, there's of course, you know, the probably one of the worst like face palming quotes from this year. When like a Ubisoft publisher or someone said, you know, it's hard to animate women, or animating women is very hard, or something along those lines.
That was for Unity, but they have a female protagonist for Syndicate. And like, I mean, that was pretty bad. But there's also like, I think what happened was IGN. There's some guy that was like, you know what, you can't do this on a PC. I was playing a game. And I pressed record and took a screenshot, and like I uploaded real time to my social network. I'm like, all PCs can do that. I mean, it's built into your game, yes, but we have third party software to do that too.
Steam is a great example of that.
Steam can do that. Like it's
hell,
like,
Uplay
what is
can
wrong
do it now. I can stream stuff through Uplay.
yeah. I'm like, okay, IGN. But again, as soon as he said that, he retracted it immediately. But it was too late. Internet took a screenshot.
No,
and that was it.
Once it's out there.
I would say things like the Aliens franchise that came out, that Alien Colonial Marines was awful PC port. I mean, it was already pretty terrible on all systems, but it was even worse on the PC. And I feel like people think that there's actually like a loathing for the PC, but it's really just because the market is so much smaller and the piracy is so high for the PC. But like, where would you rather have a Bethesda game, on a console or a PC? The answer is always PC. Never buy for a console. Mm-hmm. All those mods that are coming, and listen, those consoles say they're going to do mods, sure, but the real mods, unlike the Wild West of mods, are all going to be on the PC.
And that's a good callback to the issues when they tried to monetize those mods with Bethesda and Skyrim earlier this year. And a lot of people I've talked to, I think we're all interested to see if they're going to bring that back, either with another game or in some different capacity.
Well, I think, you know what, we should talk about Fallout, but maybe a little bit later. But I would say, if you were a publisher and you're seeing all these issues with PC ports, how would you deal with it?
Try to get someone who knows what they're doing to work on instead of half-assing.
But you have a very limited budget, and not many companies do it.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, you're basically stuck between the fry pan and the fire there. You got to do one thing. Either you're going to have to take a hit in terms of the cost of development, or you could take the hit in terms of future sales of your game.
How about if you don't release the PC part, pre-release of the game, and then release it a few months after? How'd you feel about that? Would that be possible?
That wouldn't be too bad. We saw that with, like, recently with, like, Helldivers, who came out 10 months after being out on PS4. But I know a lot of publishers are really keen on getting the cross-platform, you know, same-day sale for everything, because they want to hit everything at one time.
Well, because it makes the marketing dollars the most efficient, right? Why would you? Because, like, again, when Arkham Knight got re-released, and it was great, I praise them for pulling it from the stores, but when they came back out, people were like, oh, that pile of crap. And it was still kind of a pile of a crap,
It's gotten better from what I've heard, but it's nowhere near, like, the same state as, like, Arkham City and Arkham Asylum.
So, I think this would be a good lead-in, by the way, talking about bad PC ports. That there's some games that do have a threshold for bugs. For example, Witcher 3 had bugs. Fallout 4 had tons of bugs, right? But it's funny that for some reason, there's been such a huge hate train on Fallout 4 because of bugs. And like saying like, well, companies have to be responsible for having all these bugs in their games. I'm like, well, Fallout 4 is an open world game where you can do pretty much anything you want. So there's a high chance of weird things happening or weird issues that the developers didn't think about. And there's only so much they can do in terms of QA. Or never release the game. You know what I mean? And to me, of all the Bethesda games, this has been the most stable of all the Bethesda games I've played, which is saying something. I played all the way from like the 2D, what's it called? Like Wolfenstein, what's that style called?
Wolfenstein.
There's a term for it, right? They're all 2D pixels. They're 2D sprites in 3D space.
Can't think of it right now.
God dang it! Look at us. We should know. But anyways, I've been playing the games for a pretty long time. So that's again, it's big praise for me to say that. And it's such a huge world. It just makes me like, I get overwhelmed thinking about it. When I enter a new area, a new faction, I'm like, oh my god, there's this whole area. And there's like, again, like I jumped into a lake or a quarry and found an underground cult that worships the Atom. I'm like, what the hell? Like, I'm like, I didn't expect to see anything at the bottom of this cavern. And then I started tripping out. I'm like, this is awesome. It's like all these weird events make Fallout so amazing. And again, I think what's happening is that the hate and rage for like Arkham City and Assassin's Creed got like rolled over to Fallout 4 because all their views said it's great except for all these bugs. And they're like, you can't give it a 9 out of 10 and have all these bugs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, the game to me deserves like a 10. Like it deserves its highest score because it is such a ambitious game, and I think we should reward ambition. And again, people are always like, well, it's really like the same like Fallout 3. I'm like, they improved a lot of their systems, and there's a limit to how much you can innovate before it's a different game entirely.
And that is a great call in for something I want to talk about in a few minutes regarding what they're doing with XCOM 2, but that's going to probably be for our final topic.
But that excites me, by the way. I'm watching the trailer, I'm watching the game. I love XCOM 1. It was a great response to like, yo, let's make that third person XCOM game. And everyone was like, oh hell no, no one wants this. We don't want this. Please make the original remake XCOM, please. And they did, and everyone loved it, and it was great. And it still gives me like, I still feel nervous playing every mission, right, in that game. While you played Confidential, right? The third person one.
Was that the Bureau? Yes.
Your Bureau, yeah. How was that?
It was interesting, but it felt like this was sort of like a band-aid, you know, like a sinking ship game. Like, they just had to get it out no matter what type thing. Like, they didn't put, you know, the A team on it.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, with like a C team, it's like, yo, let's take some Mass Effect elements and let's do this. I'm like, oh, why? So, like, if they never released XCOM, how'd you feel about that?
Yeah, that would have sucked, but...
And then all you had was the Bureau. How'd you feel about that?
If it was just that version of the Bureau, I would be very unhappy. But I really wanted to see what they were going to do originally with XCOM. You know, the original pitch for a first-person XCOM. I thought that sounded really
third-person.
Cool. Yeah, I think it was a first-person. No, you were right, it's third-person. The original formula was going to be like an open-ended type game. You had like different missions. It had like the research element of it. That sounded really cool. Yep.
That's still not XCOM, though. You know what I'm saying? We don't want Syndicate again. Oh, it's horrible.
Wait,
why?
What about Shadowrun? Remember that? The multi...
God dang it. They did the same thing to Shadowrun, too. They did the same thing to Shadowrun, but then we got Shadowrun Returns, which was, like, a good throwback. And I still love that game. That's why I want to play Hong Kong when it goes on sale, whenever sales happen. But it's just kind of like... Those games, again, if you take too many elements away from it, it's not the same franchise for XCOM. Example, if you make it first person, put aliens in it, that's not XCOM, right? And if you're like, you make it a squad-based, sure, that's in XCOM, but that doesn't make it XCOM. Mm-hmm. And again, same with those other series we just talked about, all bastardizations of a great series, especially series that have role-playing elements, hardcore role-playing elements.
Now, speaking about sequels, one thing that I've spoken to a lot of other fellows as well is the importance of a sequel is to refine the original concept. The first game is the one you use to experiment. This is the one that you're going to see what works, what doesn't work. And then the sequel is when you really blow it out of the water. We saw this with Assassin's Creed 2, for instance. And... It's very important, as you said, Ken, there's a fine line between adding new systems to make the game better and completely changing the game so it's nowhere near the original vision.
Right, and you always hear gamers complain about innovation. There's lack of innovation, but, like, again, why would you say that? I mean, there's certain things that they can improve upon, sure, but it's an improvement. It's a sequel. That makes sense. So if you're playing, like, let's say you're playing like Call of Duty, right? And the next Call of Duty comes out, and it's a third person like isometric, music based game, right? Where you only can shoot to a beat. Like, yes, that's straight up an innovation for sure. However, that is not what the audience.
That's
wanted.
Not Call of Duty. We need to come with a catchy name for that, though.
That would be Call of Booty.
There we go. That's 2016's Game of the Year winner right there.
Yeah, Call of Booty, a rhythm-based shooting game with third-person isometric.
Let's put it on Kickstarter. We'll get the funding in 24 hours.
Yeah, and it's going to have 60 players. It's going to be amazing.
Yes.
60-player matches.
And taking this back to Fallout 4, I spoke with Jamie Magan a few weeks ago, and he talked about the same thing with Fallout, that it wasn't as bug-filled compared to previous Bethesda games. And the Bethesda games are quite interesting by the fact that they are such big experiences. You're not buying a Bethesda game to get like a 6-hour campaign. You're getting, you know, a 30-plus-hour world to explore. And I think that gives them a little bit more leeway with having bugs. I mean, how can they look at every single rock that they design to make sure there's no bugs? It's impossible. And
right. And I was going to say, to add to that, it's the world that people call it ugly, like, because the world is so ridiculously huge, they can't optimize it, like, say, like, you know, by the way, I feel really bad, but Tomb Raider, for example, like, that's a very linear experience. And they set organized every set piece. They like made amazing graphics for each section, but you can't do that for Fallout. I mean, it would be
Fallout. It's an open game. There's nothing in there that's going to be set in a sense.
It's so huge, right? And again, but thing is that with Tomb Raider, you all have the same experience. But for Fallout, everyone has their own stupid story, and it comes from the open world nature. So I feel like. Like, people are complaining, like, oh, well, they shouldn't be releasing games like this. Like, this isn't Fallout anymore. I'm like, oh, it's still Fallout. This is what you make out of it. But I feel like, again, I feel like a lot of the complaining and a lot of the hatred that's coming for it, all these negative reviews coming out for it, comes from this, like, this revolt from against bad PC ports. And Fallout isn't a bad PC port. It's just...
It's a PC.
It's a Bethesda game, right. And I still love Skyrim. And I still love Fallout. Now, does it have like the same interesting characters as Witcher 3? Not as strong, but it's a different kind of game. I wouldn't compare them directly to one another.
And we're seeing, I guess, to wrap up the section, we are definitely seeing, as you said, Ken, more gamers being scrutinizing PC games. They're being a lot more cautious about bugs, about issues, because again, as a common theme of what we've talked about over the last year, that there's so many games that are trying to take your time away that you want to make sure you get the most out of every title. So if you buy a game and it's buggy and it doesn't work, it doesn't make sense for you to sit around and wait for a patch. You can return that game and buy another one, you know, immediately off of Steam and have a much better experience. So it's kind of led to this very, I don't want to say contradiction, but almost a paradox that developers want to support these games for a long time, but it's still vital to get that first experience to be as good as possible.
Yeah, and to me, Fallout 4's intro is still a bit... I think Fallout 3 did much better. I mean, it's still constrictive, but like Fallout 4, they give you a power suit like right away. Like very early on. But you know what? I would say the power suits, even though they do kind of make you feel a little too powerful in the beginning, the power suits are a great addition. You really feel like you're in like a suit of armor that's powered by like a fusion reactor. And there's just the whole world's of like kind of additions or things that they smoothed out that I think is a lot better. And they added a bunch of just things. Everyone complains about the settlements in the game too. But because there's like lack of tutorials for it, but they didn't focus on it. They're like, yo, here's a place that if you want to go this route, you can. But I don't see why you would complain about that if it's, you know, a system that wasn't, it's just an added system. It doesn't affect the story to a degree. It's actually pretty fun because you have multiple settlements and you build defenses for each one and you can just like customize your wasteland in a way. There's just so many interesting secrets to the game too that you could spend years and not find all of it. So I applaud a game being that ambitious, and I'm fine with that. And if you really want like a streamlined experience, look at Call of Duty, right? Done. So go play Call of Duty. Everyone have the same experience. It's gonna look great. It has lots of money for the technology. But again, they'll probably just complain about not lack of innovation. Like, we're still shooting guns. Or projectile lasers. Like, I feel like we should add whatever to it. So again, it's not, I think you made a good point. It's about improving systems that already exist or things that are within the motif of the game that's set up. So I think that makes more sense than just completely changing the genre and calling it innovation. Because that's what innovation is supposed to do, is to jump to or to do some sort of a critical improvement beyond. But the things that people are, I would say, misconstrue the word innovation into something like not innovation, they think of different. And that's not the same thing as innovation.
Definitely. And it's one of those topics we could spend the entire cast talking about, too. I think I do want to start to wrap things up. We're getting close to an hour and a half. So,
sure.
My final topic, and this is going to be a brief one, is getting back to the motif of ending 2015. So, for you, Ken, mm-hmm. Do you have any breakout games or ones that you really loved to end 2015 on?
Overwatch doesn't technically count because it's in beta, but over the 3 days I played it, I was super in love with that game. In terms of accomplishments, I got to gold rank in League, and then I got my alt count to the same level, and that was a stupid, stupid waste of my life. I also really love Fallout 4. I have just a lot of weird stories that kind of get attached to it, and that's the reason what I really love about it is sharing stupid stories that happen and all those weird glitches and scenarios that happen in it. And I guess of a smaller games that I played, I really, really loved Life is Strange, because I'm a huge fan of adventure games, and I feel like they took Telltale's formula and made it much and just improved upon it, right? And that time mechanic they got from the first game, the first attempt, Dontnod's first attempt of a game, which is a Remember Me, and used that in Life is Strange, and I think it came out really well. I don't quite like the fan base. It's kind of too Tumblr-y, I really enjoy the universe and characters and what they tried to do. My issue with Life is Strange is that it makes me kind of worry about developers being fed too much about their fandom, especially episodic games. Like, this is something that we might bring up in the future, but when you have an episodic game, your development or in story could be skewed between episodes because of your fan reactions, right? Not just improvements, but major changes. Like, I don't know if that's fair or not. You know what I mean? And I wonder how developers actually deal with that. So if we ever have an episodic game developer, I would like to ask him that question.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a little of Life is Strange, specifically the last episode, was kind of changed around based on fan reactions.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I think, from a development point of view, that can happen now in games, especially episodic game market. Because as we talked about, and I wrote, previously video games were very much an insular activity. The fan base wouldn't see the inner workings of the game. They wouldn't much less be able to contribute to it. And today, there's a lot more transparency between developers and the consumers. Early Access is a brilliant example of this. We brought up Kickstarter numerous times on this cast, but today, as a fan, you have a lot more control and a lot more outreach to these developers. And with an episodic game, as you just said, Ken, it's kind of interesting to see that you can have a game change across, you know, 4 or 5 episodes of a game, especially when they're developed several months at a time. I know with, The Wolf Among Us and Telltale, it's usually, 2 or 3 months per, for each episode.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm very excited for the Batman Telltale game.
That sounds interesting.
I want to see it. I like Telltale storytelling. Mm-hmm. I love Batman together. I want it.
If they get Kevin Conroy, that would be the dream right there.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I actually really love Tales of the Borderland too. It was also that's probably their best this year, Tales of the Borderland. If you haven't tried it and you love Tales of the Borderland, give that a shot. I think that was good. Now, I didn't play the Game of Thrones one because I haven't watched Game of Thrones, sadly. But I know that Tales of Borderland was pretty awesome, and it ended pretty well too. I would say if you haven't tried it, give it a shot. I'm still it's so sad that I'm such a huge fan of Dreamfall, especially Longest Journey, that it's hard for me to kind of get through the chapters because they kind of force me to play characters I don't want to play. I'm like, I don't want to play this guy. Why do I have to play this guy? I mean, the main character changed from Longest Journey too.
Okay. I guess for me, in terms of 2015, I played so many games. I always hate doing these end-of-the-year wrap-ups because I played so many games I can't remember all the games that came out in 2015. Some quick ones off the top of my head. I was really surprised how much I enjoyed Big Pharma that came out earlier this year. There's, of course, Prison Architect. Invisible Ink was a surprise, although I wish that they did a little bit more in terms of adding more content to it. I'm, you know, chomping at the bit for Darkest Dungeon to be released. I believe the current release date is end of January. Clockwork Empires is shaping up really well. Other than that, I'm still not even sure what my game of the year will be. I'm sort of thinking about Mario Maker, but I think that may be too cliche to have that as number one.
How about Binding of Isaac Afterbirth?
Every year, every time they release a new Binding of Isaac game, that's always on my list. At some point, I'm just going to say no more Binding of Isaac.
I haven't bought that, actually. I didn't buy it when it was on sale, so I never just got it. So now I'm sad. I'm waiting for the sale now for that one, too.
All right, and then I guess my final question, at least from my point of view for a 2015 wrap-up then, Ken, is what game are you most looking forward to for 2016 or games?
Oof. I'm only thinking about movies right now. Batman, Telltale, there's one. Definitely something I'm looking forward to. As for, I guess the question is, what's coming? I can't think of anything that's coming that I'm interested in 2016. The only thing that I'm looking forward to is the consumer version of the VR headsets, HTC Vive and Oculus Rift, not with the touch right away, but Oculus Rift comes out in 2016 Q1 or Q2, probably hopefully Q1, but it's up to Q2. I wouldn't be surprised, you know? So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Go ahead and finish your thing.
I was going to say, but for games specifically, Fallout already came out, so I don't know.
Oh, I think I know the game that I'm looking forward to. That's XCOM 2. I'm still...
Okay, right. XCOM 2, too, is what I'm interested in. I just watched some YouTubers roleplay the game, or play the game, and I'm like, that's what I love about it. I like watching them do a critical, I was watching... Angry Joe, had this character who had a mini laser beam Gatling gun, point blank range missed. I'm like, in a critical moment in the game, I'm like, this is what I live for. This is great. This is why XCOM's awesome.
I had it on my recording when I played XCOM. I missed a 90 or 95% hit. I missed it. I almost started screaming on the channel there.
It'd be great if that guy also got murdered too. That's the most tragic. If that miss happened and your person got murdered for
something would be broken.
Because you stretch your resources so much in XCOM, and there's only so much your players can do, and so the characters are so cheap too. In the new one, the lizard creatures can just grab your allies from a whole space away and restrict them. And you're like, oh great, now I lost my heavy hitter, and I'll have our medics.
Oh yeah, so. I can't wait for XCOM 2. That's going to be a very happy time for me. It's coming, I think, right around my birthday too. So that's going to be an amazing time. That and Darkest Dungeon. So, there's nothing I'm dying to play right now, and then everything's going to be right at the end of January into February. I'm going to be busy as hell.
Let's see. Game releases 2016. Let's see if I can see anything on this list here.
And I guess as a quick aside, I think this sort of takes into what you were talking about with the newest Deus Ex game, where they were doing the crazy pre-order campaign.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm interested in. I'm really excited for Mankind Divided, Deus Ex. However, I'm soured because of what they did with the pre-order. Because the pre-order was yo, if you pre-order, you can have a bonus of this or this, your choice. This or this. Or this or this. And at the end, the big one is, yo, we're released 4 days early. You pre-order. I'm like,
what?
Okay. I guess that's a reward. That's not a reward. That is, you guys just didn't want to release it 4 days earlier. Because why? What? Why? It sounds the most... I know what? Also, you choose your rewards, right? This or this. So you always lose one. You can't have... Why not just get both rewards? Yeah. Why would you lose a reward? That's stupid too. And that leaves it open to be microtrans, and that's no good. No one wants that, right? So it seems like a really awful, again, another great, possibly great game being screwed
bad coverage, that kind of thing.
I'm just glad they pulled that, because I would have been furious about that. I really don't pre-order games. In fact, there's two games I regret pre-ordering ever. One was Dragon Age 2, right? I think that was probably... You know what? I would say that's probably my biggest burn for pre-ordered game. That's my top list right there. So that's why I am always very, very, very careful with what I pre-order. And if I ever do a pre-order, it's like an hour ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no penalty for, especially with online sites these days.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just order like an hour ahead and get the rewards because, like, you know what? At the end of the day, I want this game and I'm going to get it right now. So that's it.
I think with that, we're going to probably wrap things up for this cast. It's been a crazy year. I'm sure 2016 will be just as or even more crazy. But as I said, just to bring this back full circle, this cast will be probably going up just at the end of the year. So make sure, I hope you have a great end of the year party 2016. Hopefully we'll all be enjoying XCOM 2 at the end of January. And as I said, for the next 3 months or thereabout until the end of February, content on the site, I will do my best to keep to my classic schedule, but I may be late or there may be some delays. That's unfortunately just the nature of doing a job and then doing this on top of that.
And hey, maybe I'll make some guest posts, so we'll see.
So, with that said, we're going to end things here. Again, Ken, it's great catching up with you, and I'm going to be looking forward to some of our podcast topics we're currently scheduling right now.
Right. Sounds great.
And hopefully you'll have, in case we don't talk again until the end of the year, I hope you have a great end of the year 2015 party and all that stuff.
You too.
Awesome. So, for those of you listening to the cast, we're going to end things here. As always, if you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom, we have several options available. As we've been talking about, if you would like to contribute to either a guest piece on the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find all the information and links under Submissions Wanted. I am currently in need of new podcast guests. I've exhausted all my current topics, so we are looking for anyone, developers, enthusiasts, students. If you're interested in talking about the game industry or design, definitely shoot me an email. If you'd like to contribute to the already mentioned Patreon campaign, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom, or by checking out the little Patreon banner on the front page. And as I always say, any donation would be greatly appreciated. And last but not least, be sure to check out both the Game Wisdom YouTube channel and the Game Wisdom Twitch channel. The YouTube channel has, of course, all the videos I've recorded and special mini videos as well that don't get posted on Twitch. And the Twitch stream is usually most nights at 10 Eastern under the channel GW Bicer. So, again, thanks for tuning in to this special end of the year cast. Have a happy new year, and we'll see you in 2016. Take care, everybody.